Hello, podcast listener. You're listening to a Halford and Brough podcast, and I'm using my podcast voice. You can listen to us on Google, Apple, Spotify. It's the Halford and Brough podcast, and thank you for listening.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Nephew Dom back at Mission Control at home. Laddie's in the building, though. Greg Ballack on the ones and twos. Good morning, Gregory.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. We have a lot to get into on the program today. Are we now facing a world? Are we ready? Are we prepared? Are we mentally capable to deal with a world in which the Toronto Maple Leafs are mentally strong?
Well, I can't wait to talk about last night's game and look ahead to game six and hopefully game seven of this series. This is kind of what I've been hoping for, and I'll explain after you introduce the show.
Have the Maple Leafs grown up in front of our eyes? Are they ready? Is Maple Leafs Hulk ready to break out? We shall see. 7 o'clock joining us on the program, Adam Vingan from The Athletic in Nashville. We're going to talk to him about the state of a franchise that is kind of directionless right now. They're not bad enough to be out of the playoffs, but they're not good enough to do anything when they get there.
And the reason we reached out to Adam, because people might be wondering, why are you talking about the Nashville Predators today? There's so much other stuff to talk about. He wrote a really compelling article for The Athletic where he essentially just called out the organization, the direction of the team. So we thought it would just be fun to talk to Adam for a few minutes about the Nashville Predators, the first team eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs.
He said things were so dire in terms of direction that he called on ownership to finally speak out in Nashville. I love a good owner call out. It's one of my favorite things in sports. So Adam Vingan at 7 o'clock, 7:30, Sherman Hamilton. You know him from Raptors coverage on Sportsnet, NBA TV as well. We're going to go around the NBA playoffs. We haven't done that in a while. And of course, we're going to do it on a night in which both NBA playoff games were wildly unentertaining. Complete blowouts both ways. But hey, it's time to check in. All four series reaching their boiling points in the NBA. So we'll talk to Sherman Hamilton at 7:30 about that. 8 o'clock, big get for the program. Head coach of your Abbotsford Canucks, Trent Cull, is going to join the program. So their season recently wrapped up. He got the vote of confidence to return next season, him and his coaching staff in Abbotsford. So we'll ask him about this year and next year.
So a funny little story behind the scenes. We've been trying to book Trent Cull for what seems like 2 years now, mm-hmm. which has probably in reality been only a year.
Feels like four.
No.
Like a lot of things here.
So there's a text thread going for the show, and it is constantly like, Dom will throw out, we might have Cull tomorrow. And then we'll all reply, haha, yeah, right. Yeah. But this is the day. Finally, this is the day that Trent Cull will join the Halford and Brough show. We'll talk to him about a lot of things. What happened down in Bakersfield? I thought the Abbotsford Canucks were going to go on a long playoff run.
They did not.
They had everyone back. They had Pod Coles in there. What happened to them? We'll look back on the season as a whole, all the challenges that the team down in Abbotsford faced. But also, I think overall, it's probably a good season for the Abbotsford Canucks. You move from Utica, get to Abbotsford. So we'll also talk to them about that. What were the main differences? What were the advantages? Were there any disadvantages?
So it's 6:05 now. Trent Cull is supposed to join us at 8 o'clock. So I assume around 7 o'clock is when the interview will fall through and ultimately be canceled. So stay tuned for that. Again, working in reverse, Trent Cull, 8 o'clock, Sherman Hamilton, 7:30, Adam Vingan, 7 o'clock. Those are the guests. Three NHL Stanley Cup playoff games tonight. The Pittsburgh Penguins will look to close out the New York Rangers in the first game. Washington and Florida tied 2-2. That's the second game. And then the nightcap, because remember, the Nashville Predators are out and the Colorado Avalanche are already onto the second round. We got the Dallas Stars and the Calgary Flames tied at 2-2. NBA playoffs, Milwaukee, Boston, Golden State, and Memphis. The Jays will continue their series in the Bronx after an absolutely bizarre game yesterday. And a heartbreaking loss. That's a tough one for Jordan Romano yesterday. Huge day in the Premier League. Huge day in the Premier League. You've got Chelsea and Leeds, Everton and Watford in two massive games for relegation. And then a lot of people, including all Liverpool fans, are going to have their eyes on City and Wolves. And it's Inter and Juve in the Coppa Italia final. So there you go. That's everything that's happening on the program today and sports tonight. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
We begin with the Toronto Maple Leafs and our good friend in the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket, Aaron from Coquitlam. Aaron writes, what a comeback! I still see this thing going seven, but I've been wrong before. Have the previous guy wrenchers. Don't know what that means.
I think he means gut wrenchers.
Have the previous guy wrenchers taught the Leafs anything? We will know in a few days. Looking forward to your take. Aaron, we got takes.
Aaron is a Leafs fan, by the way.
You think?
Well, some people may not know that, but Aaron is a Leafs fan that somehow enjoys our show, although we actively root against the Toronto Maple Leafs. That being said, I think we've been realistic in our analysis. I mean, I actually picked the Leafs to win this series. We did one of our play now best bets, and I said, I think it was after game two, actually. I was like, yeah, I think the Leafs are gonna take this one. It hasn't been easy, and it didn't look good for them early in game five. In fact, it looked dreadful for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had a terrible, terrible start. Like, it was embarrassing how badly they started. And they were down 2-0 after 6 minutes and looked absolutely shell-shocked. And it was funny because we talked to Stephen Brunt earlier in the day, and I was thinking about what he was saying. He's like, will the Leafs wilt under the pressure? And it sure looked like they were wilting. It could have been worse, honestly. It could have been way worse than 2-0 if not for Jack Campbell. Mm-hmm. And that was really key. And maybe some people weren't watching as closely at that time because they were either, I don't know, too busy laughing or crying or just assuming that the game was over. But it was not over because the Leafs really found their legs in the second period after the Tampa Bay Lightning took their second too many men.
Yep, bad penalties.
Too many men penalty of the night. Toronto scored on that power play. It was Tavares from Nylander, a couple guys that had really been criticized in the run-up to Game 5. Then came an incredible third period. The Leafs scored two quick ones by Riley and Nylander, and the Riley one especially. I don't know what the Tampa Bay Lightning, the defending Stanley Cup champs, two-time defending Stanley Cup champs were doing defensively, but they left Morgan Riley all by himself in the slot. And he scored. Nylander scores after that on a really nice shot. And so the momentum swings. And honestly, I don't know if I've ever heard Scotiabank Arena so loud as it was last night. Maybe for a Raptors game. But generally, the Toronto Arena for hockey games, for Leafs games, like, it is not a loud place. It is a very corporate place. The one thing you notice is like, hey, what's going on in the intermissions? Because no one's back in their seats in time. Like, it is it's considered a very corporate crowd, and obviously they haven't had a ton to cheer about, but they were really loud. But despite that energy in the building, the Tampa Bay Lightning came back with a goal to tie it by Ryan McDonagh. So all these lead changes, all these momentum changes, and then right after that, the Leafs counter right back with a goal by Austin Matthews off a rebound pass, I'll call it that.
P.O.P. Pass off pad.
Pass off pad? Okay.
Get with the lingo.
Oh, okay.
Laddie knows.
Mitch Marner popped it?
Just say P.O.P.
No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. It's stupid. Off a Mitch Marner shot. And the Leafs go on to win. And it was an incredible game. Like, even if you wanted the Leafs to lose, you had to admit that that was an incredible game. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, all their big guys showed up. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, Morgan Riley, even Jason Spezza had like a veteran speech after the first period that everyone's talking about, although I'm not sure what he said. I love this. Like, Jason Spezza said stuff after the first period. Oh, wow. Great. Like, so he was like, come on, guys.
He rallied the troops.
He rallied the troops.
To be honest, even prior to that, look, from my take, there was two big takeaways here, and I know that the comeback was massive, and I know that they got great performances from Marner and Matthews in the third period to win the game. This thing was decided. There was a critical moment in the first period when the Bolts got up 2-0, and it was deja vu from the previous game where Tampa Bay came out and dominated the first period and got out to a lead that was insurmountable. Tampa Bay had a missed opportunity in that first period to put the Leafs away, because not only were they up 2-0, they outshot them 14-4, and they have multiple power play opportunities after they got up 2-0 to bury them. I'll give a lot. And look, I've been really critical of Jack Campbell and Sheldon Keefe. I'll give both a lot of credit, because Keefe was the one that took Campbell out in the previous game and kind of gave him the pep talk and said, I don't know what the, again, it's the same thing as the Jason Spezza transcript. We don't know what he said. But the obvious implication was, don't get too down on yourself. We're going to need you in this series. And for Campbell to be able to come back and make all those saves after letting in two on the first four shots was huge.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed his team to claw their way back into that. And Keith did a good job prior to that to setting the stage for it. And I never thought I'd say this about a Toronto Maple Leafs team, but they did look like an actual resilient bunch last night.
So I've got 2 points. The first is that the Tampa Bay Lightning, even though they're still very much in this series and could win this series, have just not looked like themselves. And I think John Cooper, their head coach, has really been disappointed with his team, especially in the loss in game one, where he basically said that we didn't even show up. But perhaps more than anything, last night, when the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that has only faced elimination once, I believe, when they won the Stanley Cup the first time and the second time, they only faced elimination once, and that was against the New York Islanders in Game 7, and they played like a perfect game against the Isles to win that one. They just, you know, they don't look consistently good. You see flashes of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I think maybe this has been their story all season long. Like, they just don't play a full 60 minutes, and they didn't play a full 60 minutes yesterday, and if they had just kept going and not done stupid things, like, they're just sloppy line changes, like getting a pair of too many men on the ice penalties. Now, people will say that's on the coach. Like, I never buy that. I'm like, players know how to make line changes. It's not like John Cooper's like, all right, two lines, get out there, right? Like, you know what's supposed to happen. And John Cooper, after the game, had this to say.
We're not really making them earn it. We're kind of giving it to them. And, you know, we take too many men penalties, which momentum killers, one they score on. That's on us. You know, we get a power play there, then we take a penalty to take ourselves off, and then give up 2 4-on-4 goals. Special teams, you can consider 4-on-4 special teams in a sense. And tonight we lost that battle again. You know, some games we're winning it and some games we're not. And tonight I just thought we just too many mistakes. You know, that game was there for the taking for us, and we let it slip through our fingers. Just, you know, and it's on us.
Yeah, they really are. They're not playing like defending Stanley Cup champs. Now, by the way, he really sounds like Ryan Reynolds, doesn't he? Like, it sounds like Ryan Reynolds is doing.
I've never thought of that before.
You said, yeah. It's
now
like,
I'm doing
we
the.
We let it slip through our fingers. Just, you know, and it's on us.
There's some Ryan Reynolds.
Some Ryan Reynolds in there. As for the Toronto Maple Leafs, this is what we wanted to see, isn't it? This is what we, as far as the series go, like, it would have been funny, I suppose, if Tampa Bay had like swept the Toronto Maple Leafs. But isn't this what we want to see? The Leafs get to the point now where they have two chances to knock out Tampa Bay. Can they do it? Because they had three chances against Montreal last year, and they couldn't do it. And it's funny because last year, when they took the 3-1 series lead on Montreal, I don't think there were many people out there that were saying, like, oh, now's when the Leafs are going to collapse. Like, most people were like, yeah, but this series is over. Montreal stinks. Like, yep. Because Montreal had not had – they had that good start to the weird regular season with the All-Canadian division, but they did not end particularly well. They just didn't look like a very good team. They didn't look like a team capable of beating the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially when they fell down 3-1. It wasn't anyone like, oh, like the here come the Habs.
Yeah, yeah.
But people are saying that about the Lightning, and we all know that they have the potential to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs two games in a row. Especially, you go back to Tampa for game six, Tampa's probably going to be the betting favorite. Not a huge favorite, but they'll be a slight betting favorite. And then game seven, who knows? But this is what we wanted to see. This is the entertainment aspect of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they get a lot of attention. They get way too much attention in this country. I get it. Some of it's obnoxious. Some of it's kind of like, blah, like I can't believe people are saying this about the Toronto Maple Leafs. But this is also, all that attention that they get is also why the pressure builds on this team and why it'll be fascinating to watch to see if they can get the job done. Because this is a huge task for them. Not only are they facing a really good team, so in Game 6, Tampa Bay is going to be furious at the way they gave Game 5 away. They'll be at home. They're going to be favored. And then hopefully Tampa wins that just to give us Game 7 on it in Toronto with the Maple Leafs really needing to win.
Tampa Bay, of course, is 16-0, a perfect 16-0 since the beginning of the 2020 playoffs following a loss. So you can pencil Game 7 in right now, I would say. Let's go to the other Canadian team in action last night. Not such a good outcome for the Edmonton Oilers against the Los Angeles Kings. Adrian Kempe scored just 72 seconds, a minute 12 into overtime, to give the LA Kings a 5-4 win in Edmonton in Game 5 of their Western Conference opening round series. That means the Kings are now up 3-2 with the series going back to Los Angeles. Entertainment value, third period in overtime off the charts. One of the weirdest overtimes I've ever seen, if only because I've never seen a team not be ready for overtime. Usually you say at the beginning of the game, we weren't ready to start. We didn't start on time. I've never heard anybody say that after playing three periods of hockey. It was the most one-sided 72 seconds of overtime I've ever seen.
You know what? I missed it.
It was unbelievable.
I was getting ready for bed.
I don't blame you for missing it.
After the third period, I'm like, all right, well, you know, do the brushing the teeth, have a short cry. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't cry before bed? Oh, as a Canucks fan? Oh, okay.
I usually do that after the game is over.
Right. Okay. No, I just like have a traditional cry at night, just like, oh, I'm a Canucks fan. I turned the TV on in bed and the Kings are celebrating. So I was like, oh, come on. I wanted to see that. But it was funny how the Oilers game in a lot of ways played out, at least until the end, a lot like the Leafs game in that both teams had really bad starts in front of their home fans and both teams were able to recover. The difference is that the Leafs got it done and the Edmonton Oilers didn't. Probably worth noting that Troy Stecher scored again LA Kings.
Todd McLellan, I'll say this, Todd McLellan has coached his ass off in this series. That's maybe the guy I've been most impressed with because, again, I don't remember seeing anyone, maybe outside of Drantz. Did Drantz pick LA? I don't remember anyone picking LA. You were pretty confident that the series was Edmonton's. And I don't even think
for sure.
I don't think you anticipated that it was going to go long.
No, I thought the Oilers were gonna not sweep the LA Kings, but not have a really tough time with them either.
McLellan's done a good job of pushing the right buttons in this series.
I think I've underestimated the LA Kings or overestimated the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers just looked really good down the stretch. I'm not saying they have the perfect season. I mean, they fired the coach. But I thought after that, they were really coming together as a team. I thought they looked good. I thought they had question marks in goal. And I suppose they do. But I just thought that team was better than what they've shown so far. Yep. And look, they've shown some good things, right? Like the other comparison to the Leafs game and the Oilers game was that the big guns showed up. The big guns showed up for Toronto and the big guns showed up for Edmonton as well, like Draisaitl and McDavid
let's clarify. They showed up late.
Yeah, right? But they showed up.
But I mean, here's the thing:
they got their points. They got their goals. But I think what's been most surprising for me, at least, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, is how good the Kings have looked offensively. Like they're putting a ton of shots on that.
Mm-hmm. I think they've realized the key to success is volume shooting against Smith, and then a lot of driving the net. And really, that's been the key for me, because you remember that we talked at length about the Grundstrom goal the other night, where there was a big debate about whether that should have been a goal or not. The winner last night was Kempe putting his head down, going around Duncan Keith and driving the net. So they've obviously made a concerted effort to get to the blue paint and just take our chances with, are we going to get this goal disallowed for goalie interference? Are we going to get a penalty? Who cares? These are the kind of plays that we need to make. So there's obviously been a concerted effort there. Edmonton and Toronto actually kind of, their games mirrored one another, because Edmonton was brutal to start that game. They were down 2-0 early. I believe the Kings outshot the Oilers 16-5, which is actually worse than Tampa Bay outshooting Toronto 14-4 in the first period. And of course, you know, you've seen this script with the Oilers time and time again. McDavid and Draisaitl put the team on their back when the chips are down. McDavid was on a borderline unstoppable in the third period. To give you another reminder that momentum is a facade, Edmonton out all of it in the third period. Even when the Kings punched back and made it 4-2 on the Deneau goal, Edmonton just bounced right back, and they just dominated proceedings, and you thought that that would carry over to overtime, and then they just came out and didn't do anything. McDavid touched the puck once, and he was out there, I believe, for the entire 72 seconds in overtime, and that was on the opening draw.
Can I play the end of McDavid's postgame in a little bit here?
I would love you to, laddie.
I thought it was really interesting, the line that he ended the postgame with.
You know, we found ways to produce offense, and we scored 4 tonight. That needs to be enough in a playoff game. Obviously, it's not. We've got to keep the puck over net.
Yeah, someone texted into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket at 650-650, already asking if they go to Koskinen in game 6. Now, obviously, they're not going to do that. That's
well, it's not all on Mike Smith. I mean, it's a team. I think he was probably talking about team defense. Talk about Duncan Keith, who was brought in for these exact same moments. Like, he gets walked in overtime, did he not? And he also had a bad giveaway on, I think it was did Kempe score twice? He had a bad giveaway on one of the goals where he just fell. By the way, was the Edmonton ice made of frozen banana peels last night? Because everyone was just like falling.
Kempe did finish with 2 goals and 3 points, by the way. 9 shots on goal. He was a going concern.
So the other games, Carolina bounces back in a big way, played a much smarter game. Despite the fact that Boston got Charlie McAvoy back into the lineup, the Carolina Hurricanes used their crowd. That is a loud crowd in Carolina.
You know, Carolina scored the first goal in all 5 games in that series.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a team that knows how to start on time.
Carolina wins that one 5-1. The St. Louis Blues, and you called this one, went into Minnesota in game 5 and won 5-2. And if the Wild lose this, wow. Because they got cap concerns this offseason. And if they lose this series, they will just have wasted a performance by Kaprizov, who has, I think, 7 goals
now. I'm glad
you
mentioned that.
7 goals in 5 games.
This will be a waste of a high pick, whatever they're going to give up to, because it's a conditional pick for Fleury, but it's either a first or a second. And they're going to waste an all-time performance from Kirill the Thrill. He has been unreal in this series, and I'm not sure how many people are aware of that, because I don't know how many people are actively watching this series. I'm still waiting for one of these games to be super tight down the stretch and maybe even have some semblance of overtime, because you look at it on paper and you're like, series is delivered. A series that we thought would be tight, it's 3-2 right now. This is about as tight as it can get, but the games themselves, I don't know what it is about this series, but the games themselves have not been close enough. This one was close for a little bit, but then Tarasenko went off. Great night for the Russians in that series, by the way. Kaprizov goes nuts. Tarasenko scores a natural hat trick. It just hasn't been tight within the games. The series has been close. It's a 3-2 series. It's all you could have asked for. But I don't know. How much of the series have you actually sat down and watched?
Not much. Yeah, not much. I've been watching the other games.
I haven't watched any of it.
The Wild and the Blues have been playing on the same night as the Leafs and the Oilers, so I've been watching the Canadian teams first. Adam Vingan is going to join us at 7 o'clock, so we have another segment of what happened.
Which is good.
On the Halford and Brough Show, and that's coming up next, so we can talk more about the Leafs and the Oilers. We can answer some texts in the Dunbar Lumber text line. We can also talk about the NHL draft lottery, which went yesterday, where the Canucks are going to pick, what general manager Patrick Alvin said about the draft lottery after it was done. Lots to discuss. It was a great night of hockey last night. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
And before we go to break on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, I need to tell you about the odds for tonight from PlayNow.com. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook. I've thrown a parlay up tonight. It's my special Sid Ovi parlay. I've got the Caps beating the Panthers and the Penguins beating the Rangers to close out that series. I got the Pens at 215 and the Caps at 290. Once again, check it out, PlayNow.com. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook.
The first overall selection in the 2022 NHL draft belongs to the Montreal Canadiens, which means number two, the New Jersey Devils.
On a Wednesday, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. I thought that audio was going to be more energetic. I forgot that there was no fan response. It's just Bill Daly talking. And then sweet, sweet silence afterwards. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. I also need to tell you about the Vancouver Canadiens. The Van City Seas. Nobody calls them that. Your Vancouver Canadiens are back at the Nat. For tickets or info, visit CanadiansBaseball.com and we will see you at the Nat when the weather improves and it's sunny and warm. Just throwing that out there.
Don't do that.
Come on, man. This is a good jumping off point as Halford and Brough try and expand beyond the sports. I mean, we try to be more relatable to people. We complain about the weather. I had to fill up with gas this morning. We want to get into that. Ay, caray.
First of all, I'm sure the Vancouver Canadiens privately will be saying the same thing, but what is up with the weather forecast in Vancouver? What is up with the weather?
It's too cold.
Period. It's freezing. It's raining. It's May already. It's May 11th. Enough of this like early spring cold, wet, like the lawn is good. The lawn says yesterday is like we've had enough rain. We are ready for the warmth.
Your blades are moist.
Yeah. They are. Everything. I played golf last Friday and Saturday, both at Fraser View, and it was an exhausting walk because it felt like we were just like sinking in on every step. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like it's been moist out there.
It's too moist.
I don't even like that word.
Don't care.
It's been moist for way too long, and you look at the forecast, and it's not even like the 2-week forecast. It doesn't even get any better. Anyway, shout out to the Vancouver Giants as well, who got a big win over the Kamloops Blazers last night. If you're out in the Langley area, if you're in the greater Vancouver area and you want to go see some live hockey, go see the Vancouver Giants because they're in it right now with the Kamloops Blazers.
They lost the first two games of the series in the loops, came back last night, won. So the series is now 2-1. 3-2 is the score last night.
Yeah.
Another big performance from Jesper Vikman last night. I caught the tail end of the audio.
Yeah, and then Cotton with the big goal with about 3 minutes left to give him the lead, and then there was a play towards the end of the game, the drama, where it was right on the goal line. They had to review it. Refs got together. No goal.
So hold on. We mentioned junior hockey of the Western Hockey League.
And by the way, game four goes tomorrow.
It's a nice segue into the NHL draft lottery, as many of this year's draft-eligible prospects will be coming from the junior ranks. The results came forth last night prior to the start of all the Stanley Cup playoff action. The Montreal Canadiens, as Bill Daly so excitedly mentioned in our intro audio, have captured the first overall selection. It'll be the first time since 1980 that they will select first overall when they took, do you remember?
1980.
First overall.
I know.
Oh, hold on a second. I know who it is.
I'm doing the arm gesture. Bring it home, buddy.
It was Doug Wickenheiser.
There you go. Doug Wickenheiser in 1980. So it's been a long time since they've done this. All signs point to them taking Shane Wright with the first overall pick, although kudos to the general manager, Kent Hughes, who refused to just say that we're going to take him and had to say, we like a lot of guys maybe at that position.
Also, kudos to his son for tweeting, big mistake if you don't take me.
Oh, yes, that's right, of course. I saw
his son Jack in the draft.
There's another Hughes. I forgot about that.
I think there's three Jack Hugheses. There's going to be another one.
There's too many Jack Hugheses.
There's going to be three Jack Hugheses in the NHL
in
5 years.
That's going to be too confusing.
Who are they?
Well, this Kent Hughes' son, this year's draft.
Yeah, and I know that.
There's another defenseman, Jack Hughes, that's making his way.
Which is unrelated?
Unrelated. All three Jack Hugheses are unrelated.
They need to put numbers on the back of their jerseys. Hughes 1, 2, and 3.
The Canucks are going to end up with the Jack Hughes, but the wrong Jack Hughes.
That would be cool if they got another Hughes. Not as cool for Quinn if it's not his brother, though. Okay, so we mentioned.
I nearly made a Newhart reference. Do you remember that? Do you remember that show back in the day? This is my brother Daryl, and this is my other brother Daryl.
Do you have any timely references? Are they all from the 80s? What is the Newhart show even from the 80s?
Yes, from the 80s. Bob Newhart is one of the funniest
people
ever.
I know who Bob Newhart is. So you know who else are funny people? John Candy and Chevy Chase, decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
But those are all your references. I was almost going to say read a book, but don't read a book. We need some more timely references. We're losing our youth audience.
I'm not trying to keep my youth audience.
We never had one.
No,
we're
trying
to get one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
There's nothing to keep.
Well, they're not listening to live radio.
Well, they're not now. He keeps talking about Newhart and John Candy.
See, I hope Laddie is actually working right now on getting the Newhart reference, or this is my brother Daryl, and this is my other brother Daryl, but he's probably just sitting there going, I wonder what's going on goalie-wise.
You had to look up who
Newhart. What did the Jays do yesterday?
I think your references predate the internet.
That's true, actually.
Nothing's coming up.
He had to go to the microfiche for that one, which we've got in the back here. It's
a way back
650. Okay, Habs get first pick overall. Devils moved up three spots to second overall. Do the Devils get the first or second overall pick every year? It feels like that. And Buffalo has been in the top 10 for what, a decade? They could have two starting five units plus a goalie of top 10 picks, I think, at this point. Like, they could just roll out top 10 pick after top 10 pick. The Canucks pick 15th. So as I said yesterday, don't waste your time trying to look for permutations or where the Canucks might land. They're going to draft 15th. Boom, they drafted 15th. We won't go too far down the road of who they might take at 15, because if you're not aware of how the draft works, you have to wait for 14 other teams to make their picks before you get to make your pick. I don't know if you've ever had this scenario play out in front of you before, where you're waiting for your turn and hoping you might get something, only to realize that a bunch of other people get to pick through before you do. It's very difficult to try and figure out who might be there. I mean, people have tried, God bless them. Do we have some Patrick Alvin audio here? If you want an idea of what the Canucks general manager is looking for in this draft, drum roll, it might be the best player available. Here's Patrick Alvin in the aftermath of yesterday's NHL draft lottery.
I believe in picking the best player regardless position. The reality is that most of the players we're picking now is going to play, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, and their team could have changed and their needs could have changed by that. So I don't think you can ever have too many good players in one position.
So I think the interesting thing about this draft is going to be not so much the first overall pick, because I think the Habs are just going to take Shane Wright. But then it goes to New Jersey at number 2, and the Devils have actually put it out there that they'd entertain trading.
Yeah,
their first round draft pick. Now, I don't know if that has changed since they they won the draft lottery, since they moved up in the draft lottery to number 2. Maybe they just really, really like a player. I was reading Sam Cosentino's mock draft, and he had them picking Logan Cooley, a center out of the U.S. National Development Team. He says the most dynamic player available in this draft, the Devils add another weapon to a sound offensive core. You can go to sportsnet.ca to read Sam's mock draft. And by the way, Sam has Vancouver taking Marco Kasper, Austrian-born center who's playing in Sweden. Who knows? I appreciate the mock drafts, and I read a lot of mock drafts, but when you get to the point where you're like number 15, you don't know who's going to be left there. But I do appreciate that Patrick Alvin said, I just take the best player available, because it probably would have been tempting for the Vancouver Canucks, or any team, frankly, and I wonder if this is going to happen, to try and reach for a right shot defender. because there aren't many right shot defenders in this draft, and it seems like everyone needs a right shot defender. So it would have been tempting for maybe the Canucks to see a guy that has like, ah, he's a right shot defenseman, and you know how hard those guys are to get. Like, we're going to need these guys eventually, and maybe you reach a little bit, but that probably will not happen, at least if Patrick Alvin is true to his word.
See, this is why our listeners are the best here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. Mike the urologist from Brockville, top five texter into the program. If we did a draft of text submitters, he'd be in the top five. We wouldn't have to. He wouldn't last till 15. He writes, picking 15th in the draft is like picking toys out of the treasure box at the dentist when you're a kid. All the bouncy balls are taken, so you have to take the sticky hand. Now, I don't know if Mike's urology office has a treasure box. I imagine it's probably a little bit of a different experience than going to the dentist, but he does have some experience with this, obviously, and it's a good point. Not so much about the actual toys, but you just, when you're picking at 15th, you just kind of wait and see what everyone else does, and then you take the best guy available. I've seen the mock drafts that have the Canucks taking Connor Geeky, which is a funny name. His brother plays for the Kraken, so you could have like some sort of I-5 geeky rivalry there, which is terrific. You know what? I've done this exercise, and we kind of went over this yesterday. I kind of was happy to be out of the intensive draft analysis leading into it, getting all excited for the draft lottery. It was nice, actually, to sit back and be like, the Canucks aren't really deep into the lottery right now. We'll just kind of wait and see what happens in the aftermath.
Ian and Coquitlam Texan, will you guys be doing who you want the Canucks to draft? No, because I don't like. Listen,
I've soured on the whole process.
I'm not using this as an excuse to do less work.
But Andy,
here's the thing. I think in order to be a prospects expert, in order to have really sound opinions, you have to watch a lot of junior hockey, mm-hmm. a lot of college hockey. You can't just use numbers, analytics. You can't just look at stats. You have to watch these guys play. You have to know their stories. I don't know if I have the time to do that. I'm going to say I probably do, but I just don't want to. Like, I'm not trying to be a scout in the NHL.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to do that job. So what we do on this show is we call in the experts. Mm-hmm. And we talk to people who do make that time commitment, who do sit there and watch all the video and what they have, like, you know, like, I'm watching a Kingston Frontenacs game tonight. I can't come out. And you're like, okay, that's really sad, but like, you do you.
Tell me
that's
how Connor Geeky does.
That's your passion. Go for it. But I always laugh when I hear people like, I don't laugh because, I mean, it's our business, but people will have like these hard opinions on these guys drafted like 15th and 16th overall. And I'm like, oh yeah, did you watch a lot of like Swedish games? How do you find the time to do this?
You know, like the Rogel streaming package this year. No. My thing is, give me a call. Wake me up when they get to the NHL, because when they do that, that's when Bruff and I start having opinions and try to tear them down limb by limb.
Well, can I explain the process a little bit for some of these scouting guys? A lot of the times, sure, you're not watching the games, but you have trusted people that you know are watching them on a daily,
sure,
basis. And yeah, you talk to those people and you get there. So it's a bit of a secondhand opinion, mm-hmm, but it depends on your sources and who do you trust to have accurate information on these players.
The way I usually do it is like, when the Canucks draft, like for example, when the Canucks drafted Ulevi, and he was the first defenseman taken off the board, I was like, yeah, I don't really have a problem with that pick because you need to draft and develop defensemen. I'd kind of seen Ulevi play at the World Juniors, although I wasn't zeroed in on him. I was like, yeah, he seems good to me, right? Like, but I didn't have like, I wasn't like, yes, that's the guy, or no, that's not the guy. I make my decisions when I start watching them as Canucks. Like, this was either, so I actually do not like those right after the draft. You know, they have those reviews like, who had the best draft? Well, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember the Canucks got these really, 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 really good reviews for the draft where they got Cole Lind and Jonah Gajewicz
yeah.
in the second round. Now, the scouts, like the hardcore scouts, will tell you, actually, those were really good picks because those guys made it to the NHL. I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah, but they're not good players.
Yeah, like I didn't
And
care.
As soon as I watched Cole Lind play in the NHL, I was like, this guy's not a player.
That's actually funny that you mentioned that, because in retrospect, getting Lind and Gajewicz in the spots that they did, statistically, it's a great draft. Right? The percentages for guys in the second round to make the NHL aren't that high.
And what did it get them?
And all I got them was you get
Well, it didn't give them anything.
You get to watch Cole Lind play every fifth game for the Kraken.
They lost both those guys for free.
Yeah.
It's like that Seinfeld bet. Like, anyone can make a reservation. The key is to holding the reservation.
Here's a good question. Unsigned text into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. So it must be from Gary. Which league has the best draft? I went to the draft in Vancouver a few years ago and had fun. The NBA draft looks like a good time. I'm surprised you had fun at the draft in Vancouver because that was the worst draft. It was boring. Nobody did anything. I had a conspiracy theory that the general managers were so angry at the league for not telling them what the cap was going to be until like a day before the draft that they consciously spited the league by not doing anything exciting in the draft, because we did a bunch of them back in the NBC days. The draft was always awesome. There was it was fun. Admit it. It was always
usually
fun.
Awesome.
There was wheeling and dealing.
I guess. But I specifically remember when the draft was in Vancouver and people were texting in and saying, like, I can't get a ticket. Should I buy this ticket for $200 off of Craigslist or whatever? I think Craigslist was still around then. And I remember you and I going, listen, it's cool to say you've been to the draft, but it's not necessarily the most exciting experience you're ever going to have. And I actually find it a little bit odd. And correct me if I'm wrong here. If you have a different opinion, feel free to text into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. All of the media guys that I hear right now going, isn't it going to be so exciting that the Montreal Canadiens pick first overall and they're hosting the draft? I guess.
It'll be exciting for the few minutes before, like, he gets picked and then when he's up on the stage.
No, but like when they go up there, like, and the first overall pick, and we're taking Shane Wright, and you get to, like, applaud, and, like, I guess you have the memory of that, and especially if Shane Wright turns out to be a really good player for the Habs, you're like, he was drafted first overall, and the draft was in Montreal, but I don't think I'm sitting there going to be like, this place is electric!
I will say this. It is a venue and a vehicle for drama. Is that a better way of putting it? There's the potential that exists, and in large part because of the timing now. So this year's draft, for example, is going to be in Montreal, as you pointed out. The Habs are going to have the first overall pick. Like, all the writers are salivating, and not just because there's free food. They're salivating because the storylines are already written. Shane Wright in Montreal, first overall, first time since 1980.
Well, hold on. This has the potential to go in the other direction, too.
When they trade out of the pick?
Not Shane Wright?
Well, yeah, I mean...
Can you imagine the chorus of boos?
Especially if they announce it like that, and we are picking not Shane Wright.
Guess who? I don't tell anyone.
Got a little personal.
Again, though, I'll circle back. You bring up a good point, because the theater and the possibility exists.
Sure.
So, for example...
And I think they'll keep it very close to the vest.
Right.
Like, I think they will do that intentionally. But then I also think they'll go up there and say, we're picking Shane Wright.
Okay, but I'll say we were at the 2013 draft in New Jersey when the hometown team, the New Jersey Devils, swung that huge trade, ninth overall pick, which ended up being Bo Horvat to the Canucks for Schneider. I do remember that energy in the building, and part of it was, and this is going to be sound weird, but I don't know if you understand what it's like for everyone to receive breaking news at the same time. It's a different energy than seeing a big goal being scored in a building or experiencing like a knockout at a prize fight or any big sporting moment is one thing. But for like tens of thousands, and I think there was probably about 10, 12,000 people there, to all get breaking news at the same time,
sure.
There's an audible gasp. Like, I remember just sitting back in my chair and I was like, I can't believe they just did that. And that was from the Canucks perspective, right?
I agree. It was a memorable moment. But if you're talking about the amount of money that you'd pay to see that.
Don't pay amount of money.
Versus the amount of money that you would have paid if you're a Leafs fan or just any fan of hockey to be at the game last night, or an Oilers fan or any or Kings fan in the end, actually, to be in the arena last night in Edmonton. Like, for me, it does not compare.
Right, but
it's not even close.
The Vancouver draft.
But people act like it is.
But that's why the Vancouver draft sucked. is because I remember we said, like, it can be exciting. It can be a lot of fun. You get to see all the GMs on the floor together. You know, you can tweet out, like, I just saw Hextall talking to Burke and all that stuff. And it's fun. But it also, the possibility exists where it's just a draft.
Yeah.
And guys get their names called, and they go up and put on a jersey, and then they leave.
I mean, being there is kind of cool, right? Like, it's more just for the real, real hockey nerds. Mm-hmm. And the guys that maybe this is my, I've been around this business too long, but for me also, when you walk into a draft, one of the cool things is, and I guess it's not as cool for me anymore, is you see everyone.
Sure.
Right? Like, and there's something about seeing people in person,
hey,
right?
Look,
and
it's Jim Nill.
Right. But like a lot of people don't have that experience, right?
I know.
And you're just like, oh, wait a minute, is that so-and-so or is that so-and-so? And you're like, wow, that's kind of cool.
I rode an elevator with Steve Yzerman. That
right.
sort of thing. Yeah.
That sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the cool thing about the most cool thing about attending a draft. And if you have a few drinks, maybe sometimes you can heckle them too.
Okay, so anyway, I did want to point out that this year's draft is going to be July 7th and 8th in Montreal. And then 5 days later, it's the start of free agency. No more July 1, right? It's July 13th. So we actually get I think I'm going to take Canada Day off this year. So that adds a nice wrinkle to it, too, because guys are making trades at the draft or in and around the draft in anticipation of free agency 5 days later, right? Mm-hmm. So that's always good, too. So there'll be a lot of action. It's actually great for us that they've stretched this out even later into July because the summer months are death. For
yeah.
content on the radio, so
we'll have
this
the world
going later.
We will have the World Juniors in August. I was actually just thinking of summer because we're trying to get our holiday schedules.
You will
in
not
line.
Be hearing or seeing me in August.
Yeah,
spoiler alert.
There's not going to be much of Mike Halford or me probably in August. But I'm just looking at it like we don't have a World Cup of soccer or Euros this summer either.
Nope.
And sometimes those will keep us entertained.
We
oftentimes,
do, you know what we though. Do have though?
What?
We have the CONCACAF Nations League. I mentioned that because it's coming to Vancouver, right?
I know.
The men's national team is going to be playing.
No, I know.
One of my favorite opponents, Curaçao, which is both a country and a liqueur.
I have to admit, I was pretty disappointed when they announced that.
I mean, pretty disappointed. I was completely disappointed. You can't even give us a real game.
There was talk behind the scenes. And I guess we can share this now. There's talk behind the scenes that Canada might actually get like Argentina to come to BC Place or something along those
that's
lines.
That's still in the cards.
Is it still in the cards?
Yeah, this is just they had to announce the CONCACAF Nations League because the games are being played first.
Aren't they going to play Iran and maybe they're going to play those in Toronto, right?
We don't. Nothing's been confirmed on that front,
okay.
Which is weird because the U.S. has confirmed a bunch. So the U.S. is actually playing Morocco in Cincinnati, and I think that's a nod to Morocco, who, of course, is in Canada's group at the World Cup,
right.
Wanting to get some of those games. Now, the inverse, of course, is that Argentina is in a group with Mexico,
mm-hmm.
a CONCACAF opponent. So the connecting of the dots is that Argentina would like to get a game against the Canadian men's national team, and that's why maybe, and I stress maybe, it will be played at BC Place at some point, maybe later on in the summer, even in the fall.
We really have no attention span, do we?
We went from the NHL draft to CONCACAF Nations League in Curaçao real quick.
And easily. Like, there was just no problem with it whatsoever.
That's why tens of people listen every morning.
You want to talk random? We're going to talk Nashville Predators next.
Didn't see that coming, did you?
With Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Adam actually did write a very compelling and interesting article about the Nashville Predators and their future. Where is this organization headed? After being soundly defeated by the Colorado Avalanche, the Preds were the first team eliminated in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll talk to Adam for a few minutes coming up. Then we can return to the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. If you have any comments about anything, comments, questions, Leafs, Oilers, NHL draft lottery, Canucks draft, don't ask us who we think the Canucks should draft. We don't know any guys except for Shane Wright and that guy, Cooley.
Connor Geeky,
yeah. We're not the draft experts, so we're not the guys. Speaking of not the guys, it's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.